Finally today, in almost two decades since the September 11 attacks by Islamist terrorists, politicians, scholars and intelligence agencies have been trying to understand the thinking behind religiously inspired violence. Most of those who wage Islamist holy war rely on a very marginal interpretation of teaching, picking bits and pieces of the text. But if their reasoning is obscure, their model for action might surprise you. The French Revolution of 1789. Joel Hodge of the Australian Catholic University has been researching jihadism for his new book, Violence in the Name of God.
It's their desire to overcome this identity that they've developed for themselves, which is to say that they are the victims of modernity, but victims of the West or victims of their local regime, whatever it might be, and to overcome that sense of victimization, alienation, of resentment. One of the main modern theorists or fathers of jihad, Sayyid Qutb in Egypt, came out of a time when there was great repression of the Muslim Brotherhood. He himself confronted these ugly scenes in prison where he saw his fellow Muslims being tortured or mistreated by other Muslim or guards for the regime. And he saw the Nasser regime were targeting the Muslim Brotherhood. And you can talk about colonial experiences as well as post-colonial experiences. So certainly there is real experiences of repression and of victimization at the heart of some of these jihadist groups or in the history of some of these jihadist groups.
We understand revolution as something that, yes, often involves violence, but also leads to fundamental change. Do they see it as leading to fundamental change, or do they see it as simply punishment of their perceived oppressors?
I think it's a bit of both. It's certainly that they see that a change needs to fundamentally occur in modernity, that they think there's something fundamentally rotten at the heart of modernity, and particularly in traditional Muslim lands that have been taken over either implicitly or explicitly by apostate regimes or by the West in some kind of form. And they see that their Islamist ideology or way of life can provide an answer to that. And not only an answer in their own homeland, but across the whole world, that they see themselves in a way as overcoming the fundamental problems of modernity, of the modern nation state. They can do it better than the modern nation state, and they see themselves as instituting a universal state in a certain type of way.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk, though, in concrete terms. Yep. What are some of the regimes, for example, that the militant jihadists that you write about in your book, Violence in the Name of God, opposing? I suppose here we'd be speaking about Egypt, Syria. To some extent, it would have been Saddam Hussein's Iraq.
Yeah, indeed. And in the beginning phase, you could say the near enemy, as it's known, was the main game for a lot of these Islamist groups. So they emerge out of the 19th, 20th century Islamic revival, and they see the colonial and post-colonial regimes as illegitimate, as not allowing for a proper functioning way of a Muslim living. And they believe they need to be overcome. This way of thinking developed over the course of the 20th century and became more and more extreme. And eventually, you see this in terms of resistance to, say, the Egyptian regime, the Nasser regime, and later military dictatorships. Also, of course, famously in Afghanistan in the 80s and 90s with the jihad there against the Russians. And particularly that phase then starts to get the jihadists thinking that actually they shouldn't be just opposing the near enemy, but they need to oppose the far enemy, the non-Muslim regime, so to speak, the West or Russia or what have you. And they often see them as propping up these apostate regimes, say in the Middle East or Asia or Africa. And so they then start targeting the far enemy, as it's called. And initially that's Russia. And then bolstered by that campaign in Afghanistan, they start to target the US and the West more broadly.
You have a really fascinating connection here between modern jihadism and the French Revolution, because you say there are some fundamentally similar principles. What are they?
Particularly from the French Revolution onwards, we see this escalating dynamic within modernity around violence, that violence has been let out from its medieval restraints around aristocratic codes of warfare. And we see total warfare. We see whole societies mobilized in the effort to pursue certain goals and to undertake revolution and war. And of course, this is most famously done with Napoleon and the Revolutionary Wars. And then this escalates through modernity, through the 19th century, when we eventually arrive at the World Wars, nuclear warfare and the abilities to destroy the whole world through nuclear warfare, and the responses to the effort at total warfare, which we see through guerrilla warfare, which morphs in some way towards terrorism.
Yeah, so we've gone under this sort of rubric, as it were, from a system of the Middle Ages where dukes and noblemen fought each other with their own small boutique armies to one, as you say, where the society as a whole is mobilized for war. And that means people compelled, coerced into the military. This then, for the modern jihadist, what breaks down the distinction between the person in uniform and the civilian? You don't have to worry about that distinction.
Exactly. We see this happening in guerrilla warfare and then morphing into what we see as modern terrorism. The distinction between civilian and military agent, which is a key distinction when we're thinking about modern wars of law or medieval laws, that distinction is eroded. And then once we get to modern terrorism, particularly jihadist groups and their actions, we see very little respect or no respect for this differentiation between military and civilian. And Osama bin Laden, of course, said this famously himself: we do not differentiate between those dressed in military uniforms and civilians. He said that in 2004. He'd said that in because he felt like his enemies weren't doing that. So of course he feels like he's, again, mirroring what is being done to him, but then escalating it. So this is a dangerous trajectory in modern warfare and violence, that we start to lose this distinction. We've tried to resuscitate it, especially after the World Wars, and we've tried to ensure that we're not just willy-nilly taking out civilians. But terrorism, of course, doesn't differentiate, and it uses indiscriminate forms of violence, and it conscripts men or women or children.
The drone attacks during the Obama era, that was probably something that has continued to feed this jihadist appetite, as it were, because their argument would be, well, look, we saw, you know, the Obama administration claiming to pinpoint attacks, but often taking out innocent people.
Yes. And the invasion of Iraq, invasion of Afghanistan, and then the drone warfare. This is certainly in the foremost of the jihadist minds and others. And it's a critique of the American military machine as well as the Western. Is it actually making this distinction or not? Some people would say no. I think there's still, at least in their operations, they still try to make that distinction and justify their targets. But you could argue certainly that with the loss of civilian life, is it being done too easily in some of these attacks and some of these drone attacks?
How does modern jihadism also make the killing of people something sacred? Because that is the real key to this.
It is. It is at the heart of the jihadist mentality, that what they're doing is not only politically or economically beneficial and legitimate, but it's a sacred, holy duty, that they're undertaking a sacred, holy task on behalf of God. And they reject this, the pacifist stream of jihad. They reject that within Islam and the Abrahamic traditions more broadly. They see this as an illegitimate stream, that the only real form of jihad is the violent, aggressive military form of jihad, and that undertaking this violence is key to bringing about the true Islamic regime. This is the distinctiveness of jihadism. Jihadism is a totalitarian movement like other forms of totalitarianism, like Nazism or communism or what have you. It has the same totalitarian traits, the mobilization of a whole society under an ideological vision to bring about a total regime and to do so through any means of violence. But they do it explicitly in the name of God. And this is the distinctive element of jihadism. And I argue that they are using the Abrahamic God to justify this use of violence as holy, sacred duty by saying that they're on the side of victims, because the God of the Abrahamic traditions is a God on the side of victims. You can see it throughout the texts of the Bible or of the Quran, that God is on the side of Abel or of Joseph or the suffering servant in Isaiah or Jesus himself or Muhammad, who's oppressed by his confreres or what have you. So God is the God of victims. But of course, this generally in Abrahamic traditions is then used to undermine violence, to say that violence shouldn't be done in the name of God. But jihadism, along with some other movements within the Abrahamic traditions, flips this and says, no, God is actually on the side of the victims. He's asking us and commanding us to undertake violent action.
That's Joel Hodge of the Australian Catholic University and author of the new book, Violence in the Name of God.